We're making a shift here, and I said this in the orientation. This time I called it transition and orientation because I felt that there was just a lot left over from the previous chapter. But in that I say, chapter 8 is taking a little bit different approach to some of the same issues and possibilities that are open in chapter 7. And what I suggested in the transition was, you could actually see what feels more comfortable to you or natural to you. Maybe that's the right way to say it. They both work just fine and they support each other, but we are moving into a somewhat different way of analyzing the way in which thoughts create our world, you could say. That's a little bit too simple to say it that way, but we're going to have a chance to look in the reading to see with a more sophistication, we could say. So, in the very beginning, the first sentence of page 59, Rinpoche talks about how we experience reality in conventional terms. He says, so he has this analysis, and he's saying thoughts. There's a dynamic that pulls thoughts towards substance, so they become carriers for the field communique. But that is at a much more at a deeper level that we don't usually notice. What we usually notice is that there's an interplay of interconnecting stories. Now, this is a great example. Somebody's being very loud, but I'm sure it'll stop now. There's an interplay of interconnecting stories. That's not how we experience conventional reality. We experience conventional reality in terms of subject and object, and me and others, and so on. So when Rinpoche says that the dynamic manifests in conventional terms as the interplay of interconnecting stories, it's more like saying if we look at our conventional reality, it's possible to look. Brigitte mentioned something I mentioned before. There's a lot of background noise. Somebody sounds like they're tearing up paper or something. I don't know what it is. So if you think you're the one responsible, be aware that it's having an impact on other people. But it's getting better. Okay, so to come back to this idea, we have our conventional reality, but we're not looking at it in conventional terms, even at the outset. We are looking at it in terms of these interacting stories, which are stories that are created or put into play through thoughts, right? Where we tell these stories, and what makes this a shift from our ordinary understanding is that instead of there being identified objects and the subject and so on, we can look at it in terms of stories which link with other stories. And this is what it says in the first paragraph. The stories are nested, and they have to fit with each other and so on. So all of that is a dynamic, and that dynamic is actually very important because later, when Rinpoche is talking about how we can really have a very different understanding of what's going on, he talks about it as an unthinkable energy, this incredible aliveness of experience. But part of what the stories have to tell us is that that energy is really that's not the main point, you could say. The main point is the identity, the substance. Things are solid, things are real, and they don't change. We're very committed to making that the case. So you might think about this as in terms of the famous equation E equals mc squared, which says that matter is really identical to energy. And you could say that the substance and identities that we put into place, including our own substance and identity as the self, are frozen versions of this underlying dynamic. And that points us in I think a good direction, because it suggests that if we could activate that dynamic or make more contact with that dynamic, there'd be something very positive in that. And that's kind of the direction we're going in. So the starting point here in the chapter is to identify the various kinds of stories, or to the word identify is one that we use in a specific way here. So maybe we should say is to name or point to some of the different kinds of stories. So at the bottom of page 59, Rinpoche talks about dimensions of experience. He talks about meaning, causality, aesthetic judgment, emotional responses and associations, or he says, and this takes us to page 60, or the story about a subject interacting with objects, or a self, you could say, interacting with its world. Those are all interacting stories, and they're all examples of stories that, part of what they share is that we don't think of them as stories. The existence of the self, the existence of the world, emotionality, meaning, all of the elements that go to make up our world, what this discussion here is suggesting is that those are really all constructs. And that's not how we ordinarily see it. And that's, we can take that as a possible way of seeing. It's not as though we have to, it's not as though we have to accept it on trust or faith, but the point here is that thoughts really take us in that direction. The dynamic of thoughts move us towards substance, but it really is just an activity of thinking. Okay. There, at the top of page 60, there is another set of stories that are talked about, and this is very different. This one in the about 6 lines down, he says, there are the stories that give identities, and we redefine those. We tell different stories. So we may see a person on the street, and we may say, "Oh, that's an American." That's a little hard to imagine what situation we'd see that in, but maybe they're wearing an American flag. how Americans are. Anyway, we see an American, or maybe we see them as being a pedestrian. We're driving, and the only thing we care about is that they're pedestrians. Or we see them as being a doctor. We recognize them that way, or as being our friend, or as being a human being. Or a mammal, again, not too likely, but maybe. Or someone we just had a conversation with, or a visual object. Okay, so there's all these different ways to relating to one and the same object. Is that a dog barking in the background? A very high-pitched dog? Don't know what that is. Okay. The point Rinpoche is making here is that we have all these different stories we're telling, and each one involves identifying things. In each one, we assign a different identity. And he says, our ordinary understanding of that is that all of those identities refer back to one and the same thing. We see a person, and depending on what our interests are, we see that person as not just a person, but our friend, or not just our friend, but a doctor, all of these examples he's been giving. So, yes, they are stories in this case. We can accept them as that, but we also are very confident that they all point back to one identity, one substance. And what Rinpoche says is that that's just another story, right? A story that serves to link other stories and to account for how it is that stories can be linked, right? And he says that's useful. There's no problem with that. But that's the way, it's good to see that those are stories. Very strange that there's so much noise. Oh, okay. It says here the noise is coming from call-in user one. Let me try muting call-in user one. I think that's Sudi, but she's here under two different options. Okay. There. Okay. So I've muted call-in user one, and you're right. That is what's causing the noise. So I'm going to open up call-in user one again. Okay. So far, that's working just fine.
You could use it.
It's okay. Right now, there's no noise at all. So we're fine. Well, thank you. Thanks for pointing that out, David. That makes it easier. Okay. Whoops. Here starts calling user one. Okay. Well, I am going to mute you, Sudi, because I think you're here on a second.
No problem.
Okay. 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 So we're building up this picture in which we say that everything that we experience really is given to us, you could say, by the field communique, and everything is really a story. That is, all of the identities that we use to make sense out of things, those are stories. Now, those stories interact, and this notion of interacting stories turns out to be really important, and we'll talk about it in a little bit, interactability, right? But the main thing for now is just to see that the way Rinpoche is suggesting we could look at things is that there are all of these stories that interact with each other, and that includes the story of substance. It includes the story that says, no, there's things that are more real than stories. And those stories about the reality of things, my computer is real, our conversation is real, that's fine. We don't have to think of those as being mistakes, but the point is that they are stories. And that the claims that they make, including the same claims of substance, are still operating at this story level. So each one of those stories impacts every other story. That's this issue of interactability. There's an example I like to use. I mean, there's many, many examples, but this is an example I've used for a long time. So I will just be lazy and use it again. And that is, if you're out for a walk and you see up ahead of you see a beautiful red flower up on the hillside, and you enjoy the flower, and it makes you think about the beauty of nature and how nice it is to be alive and so on. And then you get closer and you realize that it's not a red flower at all, but a piece of plastic that somebody has tossed there. And everything shifts, right? Your whole world shifts, and you start getting angry about people tossing their trash. And you feel disappointed because something you thought was beautiful turns out not to be. Now, it's the same flower, or I shouldn't say that, it's the same red. It's the same, in a sense, the same visual experience. But because the specific story of how what that red thing is, because that has shifted, everything else has shifted, and the story of the field, the field communique, you could say, has shifted in a very dramatic way. Now, what we do in engaging the world, in telling all these stories, is we tell stories which close off other stories. So stories interact with each other, but they all have to fit together. They all have to form a coherent whole. And whatever doesn't fit, either in terms of competing versions, like is it a flower or is it a piece of trash, or in terms of just not being relevant, one story is not relevant to the other. Whatever doesn't fit is discarded as, like a piece of trash, is discarded as a potential story. And this is the Rinpoche makes this point at the beginning of the last paragraph on page 60. He says, each time we assign an identity, and we do that by telling a story, right? Each time we assign an identity, we call a halt to the production of certain kinds of stories, foreclosing certain domains of experience. And of course, the key thing, the key story that we're telling is that the world that we encounter is a substantial world. All these different things exist in it. And that story halts the production of other kinds of stories. So the story that says we manufacture our experience through stories, that story is not really allowed as long as we believe in substance. And one of the things you could say that TSK is about, certainly in terms of a kind of second level experience of stories, is to open up the possibility of seeing our experience as constructed in this way. Or another way to say this, if we turn to the top of page 61, is to recognize what the heading calls the translation into substance, right? Substance is itself a story, but it has this very strong outcome, which is that it forecloses the production of all of these other stories. So the word translate is really important here. The root meaning of the word translate just means to move from one place to another. And originally in English, that was one of its main meanings. You would just move something from one place to another, or move a person, or move an army from one place to another. But it's been turned into just a linguistic term. But what Rinpoche is saying here is that substance translates the dynamic of stories, right? Or the story, maybe a better way to say that is the story of substance translates the dynamic of the storytelling process into the substance that has been pronounced or has been proclaimed. And he says that one of the consequences of that is that we stop noticing stories, right? Stories disappear because they're not substantial. So we make something real, we create the dimensionality of our world, that's the way Rinpoche is talking about it. And in doing that, we lose sight of the story and we lose sight of the non-established nature of what appears, you know, and the term for that that we've looked at in the past, that comes up again here is that sentence in italics at the bottom of page 61. Stories, okay, let me read the whole sentence. Substance takes form through stories that translate zeroless space into dimensionality. So the storytelling activity is the kind of dynamic of zeroless space. And again, maybe an analogy from physics is helpful here. Nowadays, people talk about a kind of quantum fluctuation in empty space, and then things pop up out of that quantum fluctuation. That's a theory. It's not absolutely proved, but that's one of the ways people talk about how matter originates according to quantum mechanics. Well, it's kind of like that. The stories have this dynamic, this constantly bubbling up dynamic, and what happens is that there's the undefined, substantiated realm of zeroless space, and that, through this popping up of thoughts, gets turned into a kind of dimensionality. So, you can see that in a in if you're reading a novel, for instance, what happens is that the description in the novel creates a world, and we can enter into that world to some degree, to some extent. So we've talked about this before, that the word fiction is related to the word fact, and they both mean manufactured. They both have to do with manufacturing, with making something. So in a fiction, something is made. In storytelling, the kind of storytelling that we turn into dimensionality and substance, something is made also. But we don't, and then we call it a fact. We say that's the way things are. But it really is the same process of creation. That's what Rinpoche is really emphasizing here and pointing to. So let's take a look. First of all, let's ask the question, how's that possible? And Rinpoche points to the energy of that's embodied in the story. He says at the very bottom of page 61, stories transform the knowing aliveness of their own dynamic into the affirmed solidity of what is real. So it's that dynamic, it's the aliveness, and in this sentence something else gets added that's really, really important, and that is that that dynamic aliveness is a knowing aliveness. There is, you could say, time and space and knowledge are all coming together here, but I won't pursue that because there's plenty of other things to talk about. But it's a knowing aliveness. So, and stories, of course, do have that quality of knowing because otherwise they couldn't be stories, right? They have to have the capacity to use language. That's a little limiting because not all stories, I think, have to be in language. But just the very fact that stories get told, whether it's in words or not, or get enacted, there has to be a knowing capacity there. So it's that knowing aliveness, the dynamic of the knowing aliveness, that's what creates the solidity of what's been told. It presents itself as the substance of what's been told. Now I think this is probably all pretty clear. Rinpoche spells it out very clearly, and I've just been going over it. One way to think about this is in terms of taking form. And what I actually want to do, let's see if we can go through this a little bit quickly, because I'd like to give us a chance to practice for a few minutes together. But this wonderful paragraph, first full paragraph on page 62, starting with "This translation fundamentally rearranges appearance." I want to go through that for a minute or two. The translation is the one we've been talking about, the translation into substance, the knowing aliveness that's resting in zeroless space gets transformed into substance. And so appearance changes, right? What happens is, he says, substance takes form. And that phrase is important. Rinpoche uses it several times in this chapter. He used it in that sentence in italics that we just looked at. It's completely different. Taking form is a kind of taking over. It's taking control. It's making something. It's almost a kind of a stealing. We have the knowing aliveness, and instead of staying with that aliveness, we let substance take form and take away the aliveness and turn it into substance. Later on in the chapter, Rinpoche talks instead about appearance as being a gift, And that's the difference, really, between a taking and a gift. So, as substance takes form, the zeroless gives way, identity moves to the center, space becomes zero. We've talked about what the significance of that is before. Mind becomes zero, knowledge becomes zero. And that's a very interesting point because he says what happens is knowledge becomes subjective. It's my knowledge. And once the self is the one that knows, knowing itself is not accessible. Getting a little bit of an echo from somebody. I'm not sure who. Okay. Don't know who that is. Okay. If somebody just changed something, it's led to an echo. Let's keep going. Sorry. So this is the process through which conventional space and time emerge, and the object and the subject, and this fundamental point of not knowing. I'm going to move on from that because I want to take a minute to get into the whole notion of interactability, and I'd like us to practice with that too. Okay. I'm just being distracted by this echo and trying to think if there's something I can do about it. But I don't know what there is. Okay. So, magical appearance. He talks about interactability. Okay, well that echo is just a little too disturbing. So I think I'm going to try muting people and see if that helps. Okay, so here we are. Oh, well, that did help. Brigitte, I muted you. And no more echo. Okay. Interactability. The Rinpoche uses this example at the beginning. He's starting to talk about interactability on the in page middle of page 62, and he says, "Well, the very idea." We talk about air, and then we talk about hydrogen, that is something that is part of air. Trying to think of the German word for hydrogen, but I can't remember it. We talk about hydrogen as being part of air, and he says those are two different levels, and we identify hydrogen as something in the air, and then we talk about air. And those are two different stories, two different substances, two different identities, but they interact with each other. They have to interact with each other, or it wouldn't make any, the world wouldn't work, right? So he says, if it were otherwise, it would be like trying to make two different objects inhabit the same space. He doesn't say that. I'm saying that, but it's not possible. You could imagine a world, or he's asking us to imagine a world in which that's true. When we say hydrogen, once we've said that, we've used up the possibilities, and we can no longer talk about air, and hydrogen is a part of that air. And he says, obviously, that's not our case. He says, at the top of page 63, he says, a substance once identified would have to retain its identity in all subsequent interactions. So it would be like saying if you see someone on the street and he's a doctor and he's your friend, he could be one or the other, but he couldn't be both at the same time. Wasserstoff, Brigitte says. Okay, that's hydrogen. Thank you. That's not the way our world works. The identity of the doctor and the identity of the friend can be available to us at the same time. Maybe you might say we don't quite see the doctor and the friend as being the same. We have to switch from one to the other, but I'm not even sure that's true. The two really can interact. And it seems so obvious that they can interact that it might seem kind of surprising or even weird that Rinpoche calls that into question. But you don't want to dismiss the idea too quickly. On the one hand, one way to say this is well, we talk about air and we talk about hydrogen, but the only thing that's real is the hydrogen. Hydrogen is an element and air is made up of elements. So for convenience purposes, we talk about air, but really there's only, you can reduce air down to hydrogen and oxygen and nitrogen and so on. And those are the only real things. So that's a kind of a reductionist approach. The problem with that is that it's very arbitrary. You don't know. It's very difficult to say, well, we're always just making a mistake when we talk about air, or we're not being precise. There's all sorts of things in the world that we talk about at different levels. And even to take an example, hydrogen consists of all these subatomic particles, right? It consists of electrons and protons and neutrons and many more sophisticated, many other elements. So once you start with reductionism, it seems like it's very hard to stop. So that's not a very good answer to explaining how things can interact. Another way to explain it, and this is what Rinpoche says in the second paragraph on page 63, is that interactability is just subjective. Something exists, and depending on what we're interested in, we see it as being our friend or we see it as being a doctor. It's the same thing. It's just purely subjective. But as he says in the next paragraph, interactability also operates on the objective realm. He doesn't give an example here, but you might just think about an apple. You have a red apple, and when you bite into the apple, it's juicy and it tastes good. Well, the taste apple, the one that you're tasting, and the seeing apple, the one that you're seeing, are the same thing, right? Those two identities are interacting with each other. So the objective realm also includes interactability. Now, as I said, I'd like us to be able to really explore this. Let me give one more example. He talks about the interaction, well, he doesn't he, of subjective and objective, right? Which is another way we have of being coherent. So an example of that that I may have used before, I'm not sure, is objectively we can say the earth that we're all inhabiting is moving through space very quickly. We know that because we've learned it. Subjectively, in terms of our experience, the earth doesn't move. Right? Absolutely solid. It's the most solid thing we can imagine. Or, yeah, the most stable thing we can imagine. So that's another example of two things, of two stories interacting with each other. And the point that Rinpoche makes, and this is where I'd like us to practice for just a couple of minutes, is that if we really take interactability seriously, the fact that these stories, these identities that we name, if we take that seriously, it lets us go back to the story. It's a way of undermining substance. That's really the point. And he says in the last sentence on page 63, the solidities of substance speak of separate identities. And he's saying, yeah, but that's not really right because these identities, the stories that give us the identities, interact, right? They speak of separate identities, but interactability restores the multidimensional interplay at the heart of the ever-presenting field of human possibilities. Right? So beneath the presupposed field, beneath the, what does he say, prior to the pre-established knowing, all of that is what the field communique gives us. before and beneath and behind and above and below. Interactability confirms the active power of the zeroless. So it's a way of returning to the point that nothing has ever been established. And we need ways to explore that possibility, right? He says, in the next paragraph on page 64, he says, the zeroless offers the gift of non-dimensionality. And so here's where he talks about the gift, right? Things are given to us, but instead of accepting that gift, we set it up so that things take form, right? Only when nothing has ever taken form can we be confident that no one form will exclude others in this hidden non-dimensionality. The magic of our being awaits discovery. So, although we're going to run over a few minutes, I'd like us to take a couple of minutes to explore that, this notion of interactability, right? And the way to do that, since we're just doing it for a couple of minutes, is just look around. You can look into your own stream of experience, or you can look around at the things you, at the world you occupy. If you look at things and you are, you know, you focus them on things, you're going to be very committed to identity and substance. What we want to see is how the multiple dimensions of experience, and we've been exploring that notion of multidimensionality for a couple of weeks, how those multiple dimensions interact, and each moment of experience offers up this vast range of things, of possibilities, all connected to each other. That's the interactability. That's what Rinpoche calls the magic of our being. So let's try that for a couple of minutes, and we'll see if people have some comments, and then we'll close for the day. Okay, so we don't have a whole lot of time, but perhaps people would like to say something about what you notice there in just beginning to explore that practice. I'm going to say something while I'm giving you the opportunity to. Write your comments if you want to do it that way. So Sudhi has something, but I'll say something first anyway. One of the things that's striking to me is that the notion of interactability, the easiest way for it to come up for me has to do with past and future. So looking at something it has a certain past, but there's another past that's available at the same time, or it has a certain future, and there's another future at the same time, and you know, there's the possibility of entertaining each of those. So that might be one place to look. So let's see. Sudhi says, "I thought of the alphabet of a language. When left alone, the letters, right? They have the potential of creating all sorts of meaning. A whole language and meanings of culture rests upon them. But once they're put in a certain order, the range of their flexibility narrows down into specifics." Yeah, I think that's a great analogy. You know, it's like those, you can, you know, there's the, you can buy refrigerator magnets, you can buy letters or words, and you can rearrange them. They have the potential to be rearranged in all sorts of ways. And yes, the alphabet is like that, or you could even say individual words are like that. So yeah, that does have something to say about interactability. One difference is that words are linear, you know, and Rinpoche is starting to point here toward the restriction of linear time as one of the problems. Words are linear, and they can only mean one thing at a time. Interactability means that many different things are going on at the same time, multidimensionality. Right? So David writes, looking at a mug of coffee and then taking a sip. So this is like our juicy apple, but it's also not like it. Enjoying the sense of taste and warmth, seeing in my mind the image of coffee, knowing it's 100% Colombian, associating lush fog and shrouded hills and green forests. Yes, that's nice, and that's very much related to what I was saying about the past and the future. I mean, there's two parts to it. First, there's the coffee and the mug and the taste of it. There's you know, it's interesting to think a little about the interactability of the coffee and the mug. They do interact, but they interact in a certain way, where the mug holds the coffee. It's not as though the coffee interacts with the mug, in which case it would just spill out. So I'm just pointing that out, something to think about. But then beyond that, there's the origins of the coffee, and one can imagine. And even now, as I speak, I'm thinking not so much of lush fog and shrouded hills, but of people picking the coffee. And also, so it's a little bit like free associating, you know, when there's an image that comes into your mind and it makes you think of another image or of a situation or something that happened in the past. But again, those are all linear. One identity replaces another. One situation or circumstance replaces another. Interactability is pointing toward the multiple availability, right, of countless possibilities, let's say. And Rinpoche says, and this is what I was saying a couple of minutes ago, toward the bottom of page 64, at the end of the last, for beginning of the last paragraph, he says, if we cannot awaken or observe this energy directly, what he's called a whirling world of wonder, if we cannot awaken or observe this energy directly, it's because we've channeled it into the restricted dynamic of linear time. Right? And linear time and the structures of substance, of positions, of conditions, that's what we're questioning here. And so interactability and multiple dimensionality is a way of questioning. And then you can say, well, how do we do that? I think the simplest way is what we were just doing, and I encourage you to do it during the week, and that is to just you know, instead of insisting that things take form, allow for the gift of appearance, you know. Just open the senses, open your experience, and allow appearance to enter. That's the simplest thing. At the very end of the reading for today, Rinpoche suggests another possibility, he says, bound though we are to substance and identity, we still have the power to evoke the unfolding of a limitless wonderment. So that's where we're looking, this limitless wonderment, this whirling world of interactions without number. This is the way he describes it. We still have that possibility. And then he suggests three ways to investigate that. He says inquiry, speculation, and imagination. And in the second half of the chapter, which is what we're reading for next week, he goes into that, inquiry, speculation, and imagination. So that's where we'll be going next week. But do try to practice during the week, just in a very relaxed way, letting appearance be what it is.